We've been talking about that October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we're going to about to have a conversation about that very thing. Joining us in the studio this morning,
Holly Christensen and John Downing are joining us. Chris is joining us as well. First of all, we'll start off with Holly and John. Thanks for joining us. Nice to see you. Like, you're so close there.
Well, we're
sharing a mic.
Sharing a microphone.
Sharing a mic. Holly, thank you.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Well, tell us a little bit about Advocates for Family Peace and what you guys do there.
So we are a domestic violence agency. And so with that, we're dealing with intimate partner violence. So while there's many sorts of types of violence, ours particularly has to do with intimate partners. So husband and wife, boyfriend and girlfriend, same-sex couples. And we have offices in Grand Rapids, Hibbing, and we just opened a office in Virginia. So we serve Itasca County and also Northeast St. Louis County. Our services are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have people available that can help. We have a lot of different programs. So we work with youth, men, women. We have community outreach and education, housing options. And we also do groups for people who have used violence. So there's a wide array of services that we provide, and it's not just us. So I partially want to give a shout out to all of the agencies that are doing the best they can to deal with this big issue. So because it affects everyone, and so law enforcement, the court system, social services, hospitals, employers, schools, it's everywhere, and it has a big effect, and it affects the whole community. So just a shout out to all the places, not just our agency, that are working with this.
Well, I think it's really good to hear about that there is help out there, especially this month. I mean, I don't care at all about Harvey Weinstein in the least, or sort of the movie stuff, but to see the number of women that have been posting and are talking more about domestic violence and sexual harassment and sexual violence has been really overwhelming. And it's probably stuff you guys deal with day to day. You know that it's there.
It is. It is. And as much as, you know, like one of the things, whenever we say, you know, where we work, everybody has a story.
Yeah.
You know, like it's either them or a sister, a mom, everybody has a story of how they know somebody or they were involved. And so it's widespread.
So John, Holly said she wanted to do a shout out to everybody out there, that everybody's doing the best that they can. And I'm sure everybody is. Are things getting better? I mean, I know like these conversations, these terrible things that happen are getting all these great reactions, but are we making progress? Is the incidence of domestic violence going down, staying the same, or still going up?
That's an extremely complex question. Because you bring in all of the, has this been going on for thousands of years? Yes. Is it increasing? That's hard to say. The awareness of it seems to be increasing, thanks to the Weinsteins of the world and the NFL and et cetera, et cetera. So I guess whether or not it's increasing, I don't have an answer for that. I do think that it's becoming more and more part of private and public conversations, unlike ever in history. So it's becoming part of our consciousness as a society that, wow, this is going on all over the place. This impacts everybody. This is the rich, the poor. It's just all over the place.
Yeah, and I kind of parallels with suicide, you know, that I've been actively involved in.
Right.
You know, it's been buried for so long. There's such a huge stigma around it. And the best that we can do is just to get people more aware of it. And if it's going to reduce it, who knows? But at least people are more aware of it. And that's extremely important.
And wherever I go, I mean, I do my work, and part of my work is going out and doing presentations. And ultimately, I end every presentation with, we just need to start talking about this.
Right.
And thanks to KAXE for, you know, this is not, hey, let's bring someone in from domestic violence and talk about it. That'll be fun. It's not fun. It's very difficult. It's very complex. It triggers people. But it is, it's the shadow of our society as well as other shadows. And bringing it into the public conversation is, I think it's happening maybe for the first time in history.
So, Holly, what's your role at Advocates? What?
I run the intervention program for men and fathers in Northeast St. Louis County. So, and then also the intervention program for women. So both groups are dealing with people who have used violence, both men and women. The intervention program for women is in both Itasca County and St. Louis County. And then I also facilitate some groups with John over in St. Louis County, but also in Itasca County.
And John, you?
Well, I do the same thing, more or less. I coordinate the program in Itasca County, but then Holly and I work together in Hibbing and Virginia, doing groups over there. And, you know, I've been doing this quite a while, and the intervention program for men and fathers has evolved in a lot of different ways. And what I wish part of the evolving movement about addressing domestic violence, and in particular funding, but I mean, 30, 40 years ago, we need to help women, and then we need to help children, and then maybe 20 years ago, it was like, we need to address the men. And so my own perspective on that is that has possibly the most potential for making a change is to address the men, because statistically, the way we turn boys into men is the problem. Like we tell people, they always call us anger management. And I'm like, we aren't anger management. Anger is not the problem. You get angry, I get angry, everybody gets angry. It's what a person has been trained to do or to believe what they get to do once they're angry. That's where the difference is. And most of the men we work with in one way or another, either overtly or covertly, have been trained to deal with their own issues by taking it out on somebody else. And that's really oversimplifying it, but in the interest of time, et cetera.
Right.
It's a belief system, and that's what we're constantly talking about, is the beliefs that we have that drive our behavior. So
that's John Downing. He and Holly Christensen are here. They're from Advocates for Family Peace. We're talking about domestic violence awareness. John, you've brought someone with you, a man, who uses the services at Advocates for Family Peace. Tell us a little bit more. Introduce us.
Okay. This is Chris. And it's always risky to bring a man to talk about any sort of changes he may or may not have made. But where I'm confident with Chris has to do with the first time I met Chris. When we first meet a guy for an intake, we ask, you know, why are we here? What happened? That sort of stuff. A lot of guys do what I call a diffusion of responsibility. They say, they start every sentence with, she did this, she did that. Mm-hmm. Then they go off on the system, and then they go off on the corruption in society. And I'm like, wow, I asked, why are we here? Chris, on the other hand, started every sentence with, I did this, I then did that, I'm this, and I don't want this to happen ever again, et cetera, et cetera. And so, in spite of the risk, I know Chris pretty well, I feel, and I'm confident that he has, in fact, addressed his own issues and has made some changes in his life. So how he'll respond to that, I don't know.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot. Thanks
wow.
for being with us.
The build-up.
Good morning.
Todd, can you take us back to that first meeting with John?
What
it was like?
Well, I'd gotten put into the system with, you know, what happened. I got to John, and it was pretty much, like he said, I really didn't want to push anything off on other people. it was me that took my, you know, my behavior led my actions to do things. So there was really no reason for me to push it off on other people. I have to change. I had to learn how to deal with myself a little bit better. So,
were you forced to be there? Were you required to see John?
Yes, I was required to go.
And the court system made you do that?
Yep.
And so how have you changed? And how long has this whole process taken place? When did you first meet John? How long ago?
4 years, maybe?
4 years.
Yeah. It didn't take 4 years to change everything. No, you know, So when I started going to the group, a lot of it was, I need to change, I need to figure this out. And the biggest thing was I'd go to group, and when you say something or you behave a certain way for 20 years, when you say it out loud, it's normal, you know. And John would catch me all the time. I would say something like a way I felt or the way, you know, my beliefs. And he would say, why do you think that? And then it would, like, all week I would be thinking, like, really? Like, it made sense to me.
Can you, John, give us an example of what that might be?
That's a pretty tough question. I can't think of anything in particular. It's just when he would, you know, like I said, when I would say something. Like, I was raised by my grandparents. That was a very traditional, like, the man goes out and works and the woman stays home, cooks, cleans, all that stuff. And that was, you know, I was like, I don't do laundry. Why do I need to do laundry? That's, you know, that's kind of what my wife does. And he was like, why? Why does your wife have to do all the laundry? Oh, man. And like all week, I'm like, my wife doesn't have to do all the laundry. Like, I could do laundry. It's not a problem. So things like that, it just makes you think. And something as insignificant as that means a lot to your partner, to another person, when you're willing to do something that you wouldn't normally do.
Did it change how you think about women? Because you said the traditional upbringing, and did you look at other people as well, at what women do in the world that maybe isn't as traditional? Or
well, I was raised like that, kind of, but my grandfather, he taught me different things. So he taught me that that's not the way it always is. You know, he was born in 1917, my grandmother in 1922. So there were extremely traditional when it comes to things like that. But no, I didn't always look at people that way, I guess. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of a thing in the back of my head. I was like, well, that's just kind of how the thing goes.
Did you start doing laundry?
I did.
Really?
A lot of laundry.
Nice.
Because when I did it the first time, my wife was like, oh, perfect. You know how to do it now.
So, did you advance to folding and stuff or put them in the dryer, or did you just do laundry?
Drawer.
So, I mean,
be honest, it's a good time to be honest.
It's more of a washing machine to the dryer to the basket type of thing.
Not fold, just toss it in.
Yeah. I'm not too sure about the whole folding yet.
Let's not get carried away.
Yeah.
So you were raised by your grandparents. I mean, did you have parents before that, and how did that work out? And how, you know, the question it asks is, you kind of end up how you were being raised. And what was your original family like, or was there no original family?
No, I had a mother and a father. It was a single parent household. My mother and my father got divorced, so I think I was like 3. So my dad lived on his own place, and my mom lived there, and she was raising me and my brother. So she was gone at dark, and she didn't get home until dark. So someone had to kind of fill in the dark to dark gap. So, yeah. So my grandparents kind of stepped in, and they raised me. And my brother was 8 years older than me, so he was kind of, I don't even know where he was. He was kind of on his own, I guess.
Was it, when you were at that age, was it a good thing to go with grandma and grandpa? Did it feel good?
Yes. Yeah. My grandfather owned a farm, like 1,000 acres, so I was pretty much up it before dark anyways. But yeah, that was a good work ethic.
So do you continue to see John?
Yeah, sometimes.
When you choose now?
Yeah, when I choose. But that's pretty much all the time, but yeah.
And when you go in and you're being counseled by John, or you're counseled by Holly, and you see somebody new coming in to maybe the session and you're viewing that, what does that feel like? Or do you see yourself in some of these other folks?
I don't know. I don't really judge with the groups or whatever. It doesn't really, I don't go there for that.
Do you feel that you can be an advocate for somebody?
I feel anybody could be an advocate for somebody. I don't know why I couldn't.
Well,
you could.
I just, Chris continues to come to group. It's fairly regular, which is awesome for me and Holly because we're trying to create conversation amongst the guys. And so someone who's been there for 20-some weeks or continues to come voluntarily, maybe Chris doesn't perceive this the same way, but when a new guy comes in and he's spouting off the way a lot of new guys do about their beliefs and they use language about women, and it's just like, wow. If I challenge that, that's one thing.
Oh,
if someone like Chris challenges it, there's such a different impact of having another guy challenge a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris does it a lot. And sometimes I even look at Chris like we just make eye contact, and it's a nonverbal, you deal with this. And he does. And so he's become really an asset. And so the other guys who have been there a while, some of them are kind of on the cusp where they might go with the new guy's approach, whereas you have Chris and guys go, yeah, I'm going to go with that approach. And so you have more than Chris than challenging a new guy. And so this whole idea of our 28 weeks and guys are coming and going all the time, but Chris is really kind of a special asset for us in the sense that he knows that it's his own work that he has to do. But in the process of doing our own work, usually it has to and does involve other people. And Chris makes quite an impact in the group.
They need you there all the time, Chris. That's what they're saying.
Whenever, I try to come when I can.
And when we pull in and Chris's vehicle is there, I'm like, oh, good, Chris is here.
Yeah.
And is it, you know, we talked about the other agencies are involved, and I know with other things that we face in life, you got to work on it every day. It doesn't just go away if you're addicted to substances. If, you know, it doesn't just, oh, I fixed everything. Is it like that, too, with domestic violence?
Absolutely. You know, 28 weeks or whatever the program is, you just begin when you get to like 27. I mean, you know, it's an ongoing thing. It's like I said, I've been dealing with the group and John and Holly for 4 years. I mean, I'm still human. I make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still get in arguments. I still say things I probably shouldn't. I mean, it's not overnight fix. It takes a long time, and the biggest thing is that I had a problem with was I made changes, so now you're supposed to know that, and everything's okay. It doesn't go that way.
Yeah.
So I know I've made changes, and I know I've made leaps and bounds with myself, but you don't trust that necessarily.
Right.
Hmm. So I don't get to say when you're ready to trust me or you're ready to accept the changes that I've made.
So when you
it takes a while.
Yeah, yeah. And you talked earlier. So, like, when you do get mad, do you find yourself pausing and reflecting a little bit more than maybe you did 4 or 5 years ago?
Yes. All of a sudden, I have a filter now. Before, I didn't have a filter, so I would just kind of say what I thought. So that was another thing, like, why? He would ask, why would you say that? And I was like, oh, man, I don't know. So... So now, yeah, I do. I kind of stop and think about certain things. I mean, there are still things that I feel strongly about, and it doesn't matter who it's with or what I'm, you know. I still kind of blurt things out, but yeah, I do. I do pause a lot more than I did.
That's another thing that Chris brings to the groups is that I do consider Chris a friend of mine. We go out for coffee every once in a while as well as the groups. And I think Chris would agree on this. We don't agree on much. But
It's the head is shaking on the radio.
Even in group, we disagree. And that, too, becomes somewhat of a model for the other guys to see two guys who have really strong convictions about what they're saying, and yet it's done with, I'm trying to understand where you're coming from, and we both do that. We don't end up agreeing, but we do the process of just trying to understand where you're coming from. Other guys see that. And if nothing else, if maybe subconsciously they go, huh, I can disagree and not have to scream and get my way all the time. So there's a lot of dynamics that go on in the group. But then you have Chris is kind of our ace in the hole. And because most of the guys don't know that he doesn't have to be there. And so when he says something, he's coming from a vastly different place than someone who's new to the group. And there's just a lot of power in that. Whether it results in changes, I don't know. I don't live with these guys. But I do know that that's really one of the only chances we have to get to people and motivate them, if possible, to examine their own beliefs about why do I behave this way? Who says I get to treat people like that, that kind of stuff. And I've even heard Chris say, hold on a minute here, you know, who says you get to do that? And, you know, a guy is like, what? And it's just like a moment of, well, I don't know. And that's where we start the conversation with.
That's my why. He asked the question why, and it'll stump you, and I just say, what?
That's John Downing and Holly Christensen from Advocates for Family Peace. Chris is joining us here as well. It's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. I want to make sure I say that correctly. Now, you two talked earlier about the fact that how much of a trickle-down thing this affects so many things. I mean, we just think that it only affects the family, and it only affects the perpetrator, but how it affects everything along the way. Can you maybe touch base? Holly, you want to touch base on that a little bit?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, just the people in the immediate family that are being affected. Then you have the kids that are going, you know, if you're living in an environment where that's happening, then your kids are going off to school, and then you have a school system that's trying to deal with kids who may be acting out in school, and it's not because they're bad kids. It's maybe because, you know, they just experienced something pretty traumatic at home, or they're constantly living in that environment. So you got the school system, you've got law enforcement. For law enforcement, it's a dangerous call to go to a domestic, and so you've got that aspect of it, because emotions are really high in a domestic. So you've got law enforcement doing the best they can with that. You've got social services who becomes overloaded with cases, a lot of them having to do with domestic violence. It affects, employers who are, you know, people are calling in sick, or they, you know, they aren't able to come into work because they're experiencing domestic violence. It affects taxpayers. So let's say we are, Itasca County is a good example. They're overloaded with people that they're trying to work with cases. And what's going to happen? We need more social workers. We need more people. And it's a big deal. So that trickles down to all of the taxpayers. So it's just not a localized thing. This is community wide. It has a ripple down impact on everyone.
Before we go, if someone is listening to us and is not in a safe relationship, what are some of the first steps?
So it's really important to know that you can call at any time. Like I said, they're available 24/7. There is a website, stopdomesticabuse.org. Phone numbers. And of course, it's confidential. People can call 100 times if they want and never give their name, and that's totally fine. So, but to make a call, and we know that a lot of times people don't call. You know, it usually takes some time before someone calls because, it, like John was saying earlier, it's really complex. There's a lot that's involved. So give us a call, go on the website, and nobody's ever locked into anything. So it can just be a phone call and getting information or maybe finding out about some other resources in the community that we could connect people to.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for coming in. Chris, thanks for coming in. Thanks for straightening John out a little bit here.
I try.
Keep on him. Keep on him.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
If you want to weigh in, send us an email, comments@kaxe.org. This is the Thursday Morning Show.
One of the first things I did when I moved to northern Minnesota was find the local public.